Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It's time to ask the doctors, and we have Omicron on our minds. Scientists at the World Health Organization say the global risk from the new variant first seen in southern Africa is very high. And the CDC is now saying that all adults should, not can, but should, get a booster due to Omicron. This, as we have said, with the 7-day average test positivity rate in the Commonwealth at almost 4%. It's worth noting that accurate numbers from Thanksgiving really won't be here for a few more days, so we're not sure where we're going to be. And meanwhile, chatter as Governor Baker told GBH yesterday that a QR code system to prove vaccination status could be on its way to the Commonwealth. Is that something you want? Well, where are you in this pandemic? Have you been boosted? Have you decided to have your child, age 5 to 11, vaccinated? Do you have questions about Omicron? We all have questions about Omicron. What do you need to know? It's on the table, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us, Dr. Shira Doron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Sabrina Asumu, assistant professor of medicine at Boston University School of Medicine, and infectious disease specialist at Boston Medical Center. Dr. Doron, welcome back.
Wonderful to be back.
And Dr. Asumu, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you for having me on.
So before the break, we were speaking with Sam Scarpino, who's an affiliated faculty member at Northeastern University, does modeling, talking about the Omicron variant and saying the big question is transmissibility in his mind and what the data is going to tell us about that. Is that the big question for you too, Dr. Doron? What are you watching when it comes to Omicron?
Yes, I think that, you know, there are three main questions, and transmissibility is the number one. And the other two are, does the variant evade immunity, immunity from vaccination, immunity from prior infection? And is it more virulent or more deadly, something we have not seen with another variant yet?
And Dr. Asumu, I am going to be a simpleton on this on purpose. When we say, does it evade immunity? We were talking today about our efficacy numbers around the vaccines. What does it mean to evade immunity? Does that mean you don't get it at all? Does it mean you don't get really sick? And how do we think about efficacy of a vaccine? What's that definition anymore?
Yeah, no, those are all really great questions. It's funny because we tend to use and throw these terms around, but it's really nice to just go back to the basics. So when we're talking about evading immunity, we're just trying to see if is it going to make the vaccines work not as well? So that's one thing. Another question would be, would the antibodies, like the monoclonal antibodies that we're using when someone is infected, or to prevent, you know, someone from getting sick when they're at high risk, are those still going to work? And then the other question is, you know, the antivirals that are on the horizon, the oral ones, are they still going to work? So pretty much what we're trying to figure out is it going to be possible for this variant to diminish the amount of protection that you get if you've developed immunity either through the vaccines or because after an infection?
And stay with me, Dr. Asumu. When you say the amount of protection that you get, again, protection from what? From getting sick at all? From getting really sick? From having symptoms?
Yeah, no, this is really great. It's interesting because I can see that we've been talking about all these different levels of protection.
Right.
And I really love how, I really love how you're really pushing us here, right? So so first of all, one of the things that we've been talking about, even with the Delta variant, we kept saying, the vaccines are still really good at protecting you for what we really care about, which is severe disease, hospitalization, and death. So that's definitely one level of protection that we will be thinking about. And in terms of that immunity, usually we think about T cell immunity that usually protects you from those particular outcomes that we just talked about. So, even if the Omicron variant is able to cause, minor and mild disease, and people who are vaccinated and have responded well, it is still, in my book, a win if it doesn't cause severe disease or someone to be hospitalized or die. So we're still going to have to wait and figure out and get some answers. But I've been very impressed with these vaccines that we've had, and they've been really good at at inducing T-cell immunity, which is what is going to really protect us from severe disease, hospitalization, and death.
So Dr. Durone, coming back to you for a minute, and then I'll go to the phones. We talked about transmissibility and the question mark around that with Omicron. I want to play a little sound for you. Governor Baker yesterday on GBH talking about booster capacity in the Commonwealth. Here he is.
When I go look at VaxFinder at mass.gov, I can always find appointments. Now, they may not be in the place somebody wants to go to get one, and it may be a week or 10 days out or 2 weeks out before they can get one. But given the fact that we have far more demand now than we had a couple weeks ago, we're going to see if we can increase our capacity to do more.
Okay, so speak to people's hearts, Dr. Durone. So here we're hearing about Omicron, CDC saying everybody go get boosted. The governor's saying, well, it might be hard to get to. It could be several days, a couple weeks. We're going to need to beef up our capacity. If one does not have a booster yet, that might be cold comfort. Should it be scary to be unboosted for, you know, let's say 3 weeks right now?
I want everybody who wants a booster to be able to get one right away. So, you know, it's disappointing to hear that people are trying to get boosters and they're not able to get access. But I'll tell you that that's the reality. So here at Tufts Medical Center, we were doing about 6,000 a week in the spring. In the summer, we were doing about 250 doses, of vaccine a week. And in the last week, we did over 3,500. So the demand has suddenly increased, whether it's because cases are rising, whether it's because of holidays, or whether it's now in the last few days due to Omicron. It is definitely suddenly in demand. I want people to get them. I want to remind people that two doses of vaccine are still very protective against severe disease, hospitalization, and death, but having a booster under your belt is better.
Let's go to the phones, 800-423-8255. I want to turn to Lori in Rhode Island. Lori, go ahead with your question.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Fire away, Lori.
Wonderful. I was vaccinated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine back in March, and I couldn't wait to get a Pfizer booster or a Moderna booster, and I just did that 2 weeks ago. But I also saw a recent study of veterans saying that after about 8 months or so, the efficacy of the J&J vaccine reduces to about 13%. So what I'm wondering is, am I essentially unvaccinated now from the J&J vaccine, and do I need more than one booster shot?
Thanks for the question, Lori. And Lori, I don't know that study, so I don't know about those numbers, but we do know that the efficacy of the J&J vaccine did drop over time. That's why people as early as 2 months after the first dose were encouraged to get boosted. So Dr. Asumu, the answer to Lori's question.
Now, this is a really great question, and I'm going to first start by reiterating what is the current recommendation for J&J so that we're clear and we're starting off at the same spot. So for J&J, the current recommendation is that you get a second shot 2 months after the original shot, and this is sort of to get you back to sort of an efficacy that is as good as what we had seen with the mRNAs. That is the current recommendation. The good thing about it also is that you could the recommendation is that you can get either a second J&J or you can get an mRNA. Right now, it seems that if you do get the mRNA, is actually you may have a better response. So that is what we're recommending to people right now.
mRNA being Pfizer or Moderna.
Yes.
That's okay.
mRNA meaning either Pfizer or Moderna. So that, you know, if we often recommend, you know, look at your own risk factors to determine, but I would say, like, what am I recommending to my patients? I say, you know, if you had a J&J as your first shot, get an mRNA, either Pfizer or Moderna as the second shot. And we believe that once you do that, you're actually very well protected and you shouldn't have to worry. In terms of, you know, are we going to need additional shots for people who got J&J? Time will tell. But one thing I want to reassure you is that if you get that second shot, which is an mRNA shot, you're well protected.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to stay there with Lori's original question for a second longer, Dr. Asumu. And a second mRNA dose is not necessary. You haven't basically become unvaccinated from J&J, in which case you would need two doses of mRNA. Do you understand the question?
Yes. So actually, this is actually the second point I wanted to make.
Sorry,
one of the things that was really one of the things that was real that I that was really great to see from the J&J vaccine was that with just one shot, the J&J vaccine was able to induce T cell immunity, a T cell response which you require usually two mRNA doses to induce. So meaning for you to get the T cell immunity, which is what is going to be more long lasting and what is going to prevent you from getting severe disease, hospitalization, death, the J&J shot was actually able to do that in one shot. But what we did see with the J&J is that, you know, by giving a second shot, you can actually get a better response. And that's why that's what we were recommended. So I want to reassure her that, if you have, you know, your J&J shot and then you get like an mRNA or a second shot of whatever shot you decide, you're very well protected with like the data that we have right now.
And following up, just Lori, to your call, the LA Times November 4th says that according to a study published in the Journal of Science, the protective power of Johnson & Johnson's single dose vaccine plunged from 86% to just 13% over 6 months. So Lori's numbers that she called in with were there. So Dr. Durone, let's stay with this for a minute, because another question that we've been asked a lot, like in between Ask the Doctor shows, is when one gets a booster shot, how soon are you legit boosted? Is it the next day? Is it 2 weeks later, as with the waiting period with original vaccines? How should one think about that?
Well, neither with the original vaccines nor with the boosters does some switch flip on at 2 weeks at which you are good to go. The vaccines, whether it's the first, second, or third shot, they start working right away. They're revving up your immune system, and you can really see with each passing day, you can see more and more protection if you look at things like rates of infection in that time period. So, you know, different studies have used different definitions of, you know, fully vaccinated or fully boosted. So I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. You know, we know that fully vaccinated is 2 weeks after that last dose, but there is no sort of need to define that for societal purposes, for boosters. I would say by a week after that dose, you're pretty well covered.
800-423-8255 to ask your coronavirus question. And Dr. Asumu, I'm going to actually tiptoe out of the coronavirus world a little bit into a related world, which is the guidance from the state that if hospitals are at risk for patient capacity, they may need to reduce or eliminate some elective surgeries and procedures. Elective, at one point, we were talking about this in preparing for today, one might have assumed that that meant something truly optional, maybe plastic surgery or something cosmetic, for example. We're not just talking about that here. What does elective surgery mean, and what could be at risk if our hospitals are past capacity? And I want to note, a lot of this is, in fact, due to staffing shortages, and I think that's actually a really important qualifier here. Dr. Asumu.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing up this issue. You know, this is why, you know, when at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, we were all chanting, you know, flatten the curve, right? Because we wanted, what we were trying to do is we did not want to have hospitals be overwhelmed, because when we're overwhelmed, you know, outcomes are not as good. But also, you know, think about procedures that need to happen. You are 100% correct when you say that elective is not what we think of as elective, right? Elective could be someone who has, you know, a diagnosis that's unclear, you know, could it be cancer? Could it be something else? And someone needs to have a procedure to determine what the actual diagnosis is. It's not an emergency right now, but it needs to be done sooner rather than later. And so if the hospitals are overwhelmed and our emergency room are overwhelmed with, you know, with very sick patients with COVID-19, we're not able to do procedures like that. So it is very, very important. And I like that you're bringing up this point, that we remind the public that there are a lot of procedures that are very much necessary and that will unfortunately need to be postponed if our hospitals are overwhelmed.
Do you think that's going to happen, Dr. Asumu?
Well, I hope not. And I know that we're preparing for that, actually. But in terms of that, that was actually an issue before we started talking about Omicron, before it even came in the picture,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
With just Delta. And I think what I want to remind everyone is that we are still in the middle of trying to deal with Delta. and the implications of just having Delta and overwhelming our healthcare facilities with the winter, the cold weather. So there is definitely a lot that we can all do to make a difference, and that is vaccination. And, you know, I'm here again to encourage people, if you haven't been vaccinated yet, please get your first shot. Please talk to your healthcare professional so that you can get your questions answered.
I remember the first time you were on, Dr. Osumu, saying to everyone who called, I'm so glad you're interested in getting vaccinated, or you're asking about getting vaccinated. Dr. Durone, so here we are now. We're at that vaccination conversation still. And we know there are people out there who are now saying, well, does this raise questions about the efficacy of vaccines overall? We're in a Delta surge. We're worried about Omicron. You know, CNN reporting earlier this hour, travel restrictions in more than 70 countries around the world. You and I have talked about public health messaging in the past. That can confuse and shake people's confidence in the importance of vaccines. Would you address that for just a moment, please?
Sure. It's a really difficult place to be. You know, I feel an acute sense of disappointment in the fact that we rolled out these unbelievable vaccines almost a year ago, and yet here we are with steeply rising case curves. And in parts of the country and parts of the world, we still are seeing the threat of overwhelmed healthcare systems from COVID-19. But let me clarify that the hospitals in Massachusetts are full. They're not full from COVID-19. They're full due to staffing and acuity of non-COVID illness with a more minor impact of COVID-19. You know, just to put it in perspective, you know, we're running about 15 patients with COVID in the hospital right now. Here we are, you know, at the height of the first wave, you know, we were talking more than 90 patients. And of the 15 that we have at any given time here in the hospital, a solid chunk of those are not here due to COVID-19. They get tested on admission and they have COVID-19, but they would be here anyway, even if they didn't. And certainly some of those are vaccinated. About half of those who are vaccinated are not here due to complications of COVID-19.
Dr. Durone, I'm going to have to stop you there. I'm sorry. I appreciate the clarification. We are going to stop there. Dr. Shira Durone, infectious disease physician at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Sabrina Osumu of Boston Medical Center. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.